Hi, I'm Jason Ball, President and CEO of the Lincoln Chamber of Commerce. You're here for Business Link, our podcast to talk about exciting things going on in the Lincoln and Lancaster County area. And we have another fun conversation to take place here at the AOI podcast studio here at the Lincoln Chamber of Commerce offices. Before we jump in today, I just want to remind everybody again, please go to lcoc.com. On our newsroom tab, you can find all of our past episodes there for this American Chamber of Commerce Executives award-winning podcast. We're off to another flying start this year with a lot of episodes, and particularly excited about my guest today. We're joined by President Roger Hughes from Doan University. President Hughes, welcome to the AOI podcast studio.
Jason, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, you've got a great background as a university president. Tell us, how did you kind of get to doing what you're doing now? What's your background? What's your attachment to the state of Nebraska?
Sure. Well, it's unique. I don't know if it's anything special, but I grew up in small town Nebraska, Crawford, Nebraska, out by Shadron.
Yep.
Father owned a Napa auto parts store. My grandparents owned a cattle ranch. Mm-hmm. And so weekends we're out working and baling hay and running cattle and that stuff. And so I went to Nebraska Western Junior College on a basketball scholarship. Yep. At that time, I wanted to be a high school basketball coach. And transferred there, then down to Doan University, who had a great teaching reputation for instructing and turning out teachers. And so I began my career down there doing that. Well, I really wasn't good enough for basketball from the standpoint I'm 6'2 and a forward in small town, and that doesn't work. I think it's a little bit bigger right now. So, yeah. But I thought, you know what, if I could coach football and basketball, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be able to get a job at a bigger school, which meant more pay, right? And mm-hmm. so I went to then coach at Doan, Joe Glenn, who ended up going mm-hmm. on to win a couple national championships at other schools. Just said, listen, I'll tape angles, I'll do whatever it takes. And and that's what I started to do. Well, Joe subsequently left, a new coach came in, and by that time, all my friends were lifting and they were football players. And so I got in and I started to play football.
Yeah.
Finished that, had an opportunity to work on my master's, and finished up my master's while I was coaching. And I've always been around athletics and loved the coaching part, and got accepted to the PhD program. And then I went in and talked to Coach Osborne, and he allowed me to be a GA for 2 years.
Yeah.
At that time, the NC2A had changed the rules from multiple years to you could only do two.
Yeah.
So what a great experience that was. And then went to finish my doctorate. I had to go one extra year, so I went back to Doan. Mm-hmm. The NC2 in its infinite wisdom wouldn't give me more than 2 years. From there, I got launched into coaching. Mm-hmm. And I went to a small school, Whitewater, Wisconsin, and then small school in Oklahoma, which you've never heard of, Cameron University. I coached so well, they dropped football. And then I was able to leave before that. I was offensive coordinator at Dartmouth. Yep. I was the head coach at Princeton University for football, and then was here in Omaha for the Omaha Nighthawks, the UFL team, which became the unreliable football team because you didn't always get your paycheck. And then Stetson called and said, would you like to start a program from scratch in DeLand, Florida?
Yeah.
And so I went down there and did that for 10 years. I got a phone call from some trustee members at Doan and said, would you be interested in being the president? Mm. And, I said, wow, I don't know. It sounds very intriguing. And with NIL coming up and transfer portal and some of the things going on, I thought, you know what, it might be a great time to move. And my wife's from Lincoln as well. She went to Southeast High School and mm-hmm. went to the university. And so it was time to come home.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say, I'm time to come home. So we got to spend a lot of time with my parents. And now here we are 4.5 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the time to come home. That's mm-hmm. that's what so many people that I interact with. That's what my wife and I did. We knew it was time to come back for us too.
Yep.
So
yep.
Well, welcome back home four years into it.
Yeah.
Boy, you have arrived in a leadership position of post-secondary education, I think, at a highly unusual time for yep. post-secondary education. Like yeah. there's a lot of forces moving on what colleges and universities are having to navigate now. So, but inside of that, you've had a lot of success. So I wanted to start with the success, which was this year, and I hope I have the statistic right, Doan saw an increase of 26% in its student population.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you and your team know that kind of goes against the prevailing grain
yep.
in post-secondary education. How did Doan experience growth in a year where so many of your peers and other institutions were seeing things move in maybe a different direction?
Well, I think, you know, I had gotten here right after COVID. And yep. I thought COVID probably because recruiters couldn't go out. you know, they kind of just stayed at their desk, sent email, sent text messages, and that became their the way of recruiting. And well, recruiting is a contact sport, and you need to get out there and be around the people, be around the parents, make sure you're winning the trust. So I just, when I'd gotten there, obviously as a football coach, I'd recruited for 37 years and something about talent acquisition and talent evaluation. And so we were able to hire a new VP for enrollment, John Frost, who's been outstanding. He came in and juggled things around. And I just think we're doing things better. And I think, there's a feeling you get on campus now that you maybe didn't get 4.5 years ago. We'd gone through some struggles. And so I had to kind of rebuild the culture at first. And so that I tell everyone, we try to keep it really simple. I want every parent coming on that campus to walk off going, man, I wish I could work there.
Yeah.
And every student coming in saying, man, I hope I can go there. And so it's just shaking a lot of hands, following up, developing the relationships. Dona's always been very relational.
Yeah.
And what we hear from our students is they came on campus, people were concerned about me, people wanted to see my future get better.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they show up, they're surprised because that's actually how it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just think it's a lot of great people doing the right thing. And everything that we've done since I've been there, we focus on one thing, the student experience.
Yep.
We build leaders as our purpose. We focus on the student experience. We want to build the institution everyone else wants to be like.
Yeah, that's a great vision. You know, we've talked a lot about how higher ed functions within the business community. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a second. But tell me, you know, you've expressed, I think it's fair to say, some frustrations in how maybe higher ed is looked at when it comes to some of our political leaders, how they talk about it and position it, or maybe even in the media more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to see take shape differently as our leadership and general media dialogue look at what it means to be in a post-secondary institution now?
Wow, that could be a whole book in itself, but realistically, I blame higher ed. And I'll tell you why, Jason. For years, we had all these students, and if you didn't want to come, I'll go get Derek or someone else to jump in here. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really have to change. We didn't really have to look at ourselves introspectively, mm-hmm. as opposed to being a football coach, where every week you're analyzing how you can get better and what we can do better, and you're keeping up with all the trends.
Yeah.
What we're going through now is the same thing that the newspaper industry, the music industry, and the film industry have already gone through.
Yeah.
Our clients want their content delivered differently, and there's different expectations for that. And so what we've tried to do is make sure that that we want to be very innovative. We want to keep the traditions that we have, which are very don't-like, but we also want to keep our eye on the next 5 to 7 to 10 years. And things are changing so quickly. If we're not getting our kids ready for that type of change going forward, we're doing a disservice. And I think people feel that when they come on campus. They see a campus that is invigorated. They obviously see buildings going up and other things going on where we're investing in these students and making sure the students and parents know we're investing in them to make sure that we take care of them, not just for the next 4 years, but the next 40 years of their life.
Yeah. You know, President Hughes, we've spoken quite a bit too about some past projects that have taken shape in your 4 years there, and we've been able to celebrate some of those with you. We've also talked about maybe some things that are on the horizon that you're thinking about, and you've taken a very, I think, forward and assertive approach to how a university needs to make investments, both for student recruitment and student experience, but also how to get them out in the world equipped to make a difference in a business. You know, what can you share about maybe some recent investments that the university has made or some upcoming investments that the university is planning?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we did very quickly after I had gotten there, we hadn't had a comprehensive campaign in about 25 years. And so, you know, everyone has problems, but problems with a lot of resources are a lot more fun to have. You can do some more things to fix that, if that makes sense. And so we started a $100 million campaign, which made me gulp pretty heavily because the most we'd ever raised was $36 million.
Oh, wow.
But through the gifts, and frankly, one of the most exciting things that has happened is people are thinking differently. People are thinking progressively.
Yeah.
And instead of asking what's cheapest, with the first question is what's best and how can we get there?
Yeah.
So since the time that our team has been put together, we've built a new residence hall, all single rooms, kitchenettes, and it's really like apartment living. Our students love that.
Yeah.
That place is packed. And then We built a new President's House and Event Center, which has helped my wife, Laura, and I hold some events and get donors in, and really helps me recruit faculty. Because when they walk into a new building and a new home, and it just goes, wow. Mm-hmm. And every time we build a building, my first thing is, how does it appear to the parents? How does it appear to the students? It's all about recruiting.
Yeah.
In addition, we've remodeled our dining halls, and they hadn't been updated in quite some time. We're just putting the finishing touches on a fine arts center, which will have a new theater as well as a music side of things. And then on the drawing board, and we're about halfway done with the fundraising for that, we're going to put in an innovation center.
Yeah.
And within there, we're going to have business, engineering, artificial intelligence, computer science, data analytics, mathematics as well. And so we're looking for ways to combine those degrees, such as a four-year engineering degree with a plus one MBA.
Yeah.
Because who do engineers have to talk to? Business people. And so can we facilitate that? And ultimately, and I am the corniest president in America, I wear that right here on my chest, but at the end of the day, we want to equip our students with the ability to start their own business. And yeah. Hopefully that business stays here in Nebraska and revitalizes the economy here, because I'm still a hometown kid. And while I bleed red, I got a little orange and black in my heart in there for the donor right. side of stuff to keep things going. So really the ultimate vision is to continue to help the state of Nebraska get better.
Let's talk more about that multidisciplinary, I'll call it approach. It's not just one building. It's not just one set of programs, right? This is a part and parcel of the liberal arts college experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that is near and dear to my heart, because I think kids that come out of those programs come out with another ace up their sleeves. They have some flexibility when economic times get uncertain, like they are right now. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that so central for success for students, and why is it of so much interest to students right now?
Well, I think it's becoming more interested as employers are starting to emphasize that more.
Yeah.
And if there's been one thing that I've been on my soapbox about is we've allowed the media and the politicians to take the narrative. They're describing who we are, and that's not who we are. So higher ed needs to take charge of that and be talking to people about how we're being innovative and how we're training the next workforce, so to speak. Think about this, Jason. 10 years down the road, mm-hmm. half of the jobs that are going to be prevalent haven't even been thought of yet.
Yeah.
So how do you prepare a student for that type of deal? Well, they've got to be lifelong learners. They've got to be communicators. They've got to be people who can adapt. Mm-hmm. That comes right into the liberal arts, where you're learning, you're not taught what to think, but you're taught how to think and how to get better and how to look for those opportunities. And I believe we've doubled down on the liberal arts going forward, because I really believe that's going to be the hidden secret to those who are successful 20 to 30 years down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm here with President Hughes from Doane College or Doane University, and this is just fun stuff. We've had several conversations, President Hughes, about how I think businesses traditionally have approached post-secondary institutions and said, hey, give us workforce. I want them to be trained workforce. I want them to be ready to go. I want to have the right credentials. And I think you have been looking for a way to flip some of that relationship on its head, or at least turn it around and say, hey, business community, bring us your problems. We'll find the students and programs that can help assess that.
Mm-hmm.
What's been your approach to those conversations? How successful do you feel that effort has been?
I think it's been great. And you know, I'm not one to sit around and ask someone else to do something if I can do something myself to get moving. And so that's where I think higher ed has a responsibility for placing their students after graduation. And the way they do that is develop those relationships and connections.
Yeah.
So what we've been doing in lieu of this building that we're going to be building with the innovation centers mm-hmm. is we've been asking CEOs of businesses and CEOs of engineering firms to come in and, first of all, how do we build what's the skill set that you want to see in your workforce? What's the things that you don't see in your workforce that you wish you had? And what skill sets do we need to be thinking about 7 to 10 years down the road?
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought them in and essentially picked their brain. And I know this sounds crazy, but what I'm ultimately trying to do is build the ultimate graduate that mm-hmm. everyone wants to hire. And this came from my time at Princeton. Myself and another Princeton alum were having breakfast with a Harvard alum. And mm-hmm. I don't say the H word much because of the competition between them. But anyway, being the smart aleck that I am, I said, hey, I suppose you only hire Harvard guys. He goes, no, I hire Princeton guys. And I said, wait a minute, tell me that. And so he went into, I only hire Princeton people because I know exactly what I'm getting. I know their leaders. I know they communicate well. I know that they work their tails off. They're very bright. And so I got to thinking, what would it be like if our Doane graduates, every time an employer or a professional school got a resume, they knew exactly what they were getting. And that resume just goes over here. Absolutely. That's the person we want to go after. So what better way to learn what that looks like by asking the people who are doing the hiring? And so we've had them on campus helping us with our curriculum, and faculty members and deans have been right there and have already incorporated some of the things into their teaching. We've had three ideations. We'll have our fourth here coming up in April. And then the second half is help us design the building. You know, we want these collisions. We want the interactions. I really want to make it after a tech park is what I really want to do. And so they've been very gracious. For example, in engineering, we figured out if we're going to have engineering labs, we better be 18 feet high because you can't get the equipment in. So having that conversation, the other thing we learned, Jason, was business leaders, engineering firms want a person to call when they need someone for their workforce. And so establishing that, we're going from three colleges down to two, which is another story, but each college is going to have that person that's going to be that connector and kind of a headhunters type deal for our students to help them find employment. And it's going to allow, again, as I said, the business people and the CEOs, when they're looking for someone, to be able to call that person to know exactly what they're getting.
For the business community, I can tell you, you're just so pointed in the right direction in terms of demystifying the academic environment. I think no matter how big the post-secondary institution is, they can feel a little bit intimidating to large and small business, and people don't really know how to have a handle on it. So I love your approach of saying, hey, call this person or call this person, and they will get you connected with what you're looking for. Well, that's a lot of change. And we started this conversation out saying a lot of changes are happening. How do you, and you mentioned this earlier, how do you balance that need for constant iterative innovation against a university, which is also built on that tradition, that story of excellence that all the alumni carry around with them after they've had their great experience there? How do you balance those two competing forces?
I probably don't do it very well, to be honest with you. Because, well, and think about this.
We found an area that's not a strength for you.
Well, as a football coach, you know, you're used to making a decision every 25 seconds, right? Higher ed doesn't move quite that fast. And when I was trying to motivate my players, you know, I'd make them do push-ups. Faculty don't like push-ups. And so I had to find new ways to do that, you know? So, but basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that to your point, sometimes the faculty can get a little disconnected if they've been out of school for a while, what's actually happening on the street, so to speak. And so I think bringing those two together. And the other part you'd mentioned earlier was, I don't want them calling us just for workforce. We are a solution base for your business. If you ever have a problem, we actually had a mowing company that the mower actually got too hot and was burning the grass. So they sent us a model and our engineers went to work on it and fixed their problem, sent it back, and now they're manufacturing the lawnmowers. And that should be the way that higher ed and business and really anything in the economy should be working together to make sure at the end of the day, it's about the students, about the students, about the students. If we have them better prepared to go out, and then the employers can use them in a better way to make their companies go. Think about this. How much time do you spend acclimating new help to your business? If you already know they have the skill sets that I mentioned earlier, you're going to be way ahead of your competition because that productivity is going to escalate at a much higher rate.
You know, I think one of the other challenges that any modern university president has is you're responsible for a lot of competing needs. You have your alumni, you've got to do some fundraising, you have sports program responsibilities, you have student experience, student academic performance, parents to deal with it. You got a lot of different stakeholders. And so I'm interested to know, and you mentioned earlier too, how do you construct a culture that all those different competing needs can buy into? How do you go about doing it amongst all those different stakeholder groups?
Wow, great question. And I'm not sure that I've conquered that because it's always ongoing. But one thing, the first thing that we start at is every student, every alum, every employee should feel safe, supported, and belong.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the bottom line. That's where we start. The second thing is transparency. You can't have trust without transparency. Mm-hmm. And so we do try to be as transparent as we can, both with our wins as with our losses. And I tend to find myself going into a room first talking about where we didn't do very well, mm-hmm. and just to get the conversation going, but more importantly, to learn. And I patterned that culture after a book called Extreme Ownership.
Mm.
And it's by Navy SEALs, mm-hmm. who talk about the thing I loved about the book was no matter what mission they're on, and I chose them because they win in very adverse conditions. Mm-hmm. But what happens is when they come back from any mission, good or bad, they totally debrief, they check their ego at the door, mm-hmm. and they figure out, what can I do better? Could I have folded the parachute better? Could I have had my gun magazine better? Could mm-hmm. I have taken the right step? And so I've just tried to bring that to Doan when we come into it. The other thing that I will tell you is I was part of a think tank called the Aspen Institute, who, by the way, we're hosting in May. Yeah. And one of the things they said, one of our drills was, can you develop, tell me what, if you had unlimited resources, what would you build or develop or do to help society? And of course, I'm sitting around with some brilliant minds, and me being the old football coach, I don't have a whole lot to say, but as it gets around to me, they said, okay, Roger, what do you have? And I said, I'd teach people to build locker rooms. And he said, locker rooms? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, locker rooms. I teach people how to build locker rooms. Not the physical locer room and not the smell by any means, but but what it represents.
Yeah.
How many organizations, in a great locker room, how many organizations are focused so hard on achieving the goal at the end of the week?
Mm-hmm.
And how many organizations would the offense take a back seat and have the defense go up 1 week and then have to totally switch so that the organization or the team gets better?
Yeah.
And how many other organizations love each other enough that they will tell each other the truth and hold each other accountable?
Yeah.
Get that next rep. Don't take extra rest time between sprints, for example. And how many other organizations, when a teammate's in trouble, everyone goes to help?
Yeah.
I get emotional about it because I really believe building a great locker room is exactly what every organization is. And that's why I think you see team members of great locker rooms will try to get that for the rest of their lives. If they've had a great experience in that locker room, that trust, everything that builds, think if our organizations in the business world did those kinds of things.
Yeah.
My goodness. Think if Congress did those kinds of things. My goodness, where could we be?
Yeah.
And it's idealistic, there's no question, but I believe that's what it takes to be great.
You know, I think that feeling of that locker room camaraderie and that sense of trust and shared purpose is something that, in my experience, young people and older people crave right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's something that I think people feel like they struggle with so much. Everybody knows somebody that's had a work situation maybe that didn't pan out the way they thought they would, or a relationship at work that they felt like they struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
I think people will gravitate towards a vision like that. So,
well, I hope so. And the other part is, you know, when I'd first gotten this job, I was interviewed in one of the magazines because I was a bit of a unicorn, not been going from head football coach to college president. And so they were interviewing me on decision making. And I said, hey, in coaching in football, I'm a play caller. And so I call a play. And if the play doesn't work, if the play works, what do? I call the next play.
Mm-hmm.
If a play doesn't work, what do? I still call the next play.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have got to keep, you can't let two plays beat you once.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you can't let a bad play beat you twice, and mm-hmm. you can't make the next decision and move on. And I can't tell you, Jason, how many presidents called me and just said, thanks so much. I've been agonizing over whatever decision it was.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to go do it and then be ready to pivot. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with changing the tire at 50 miles an hour going down the interstate, you know, because one thing we're going to do is we're going to execute and we're going to go and we're going to learn as we go. And sometimes we're going to make mistakes. So going back to, again, being transparent when you win and when you lose is most important.
Well, President Hughes, it has been a pleasure talking with you and your vision. I know that people, if they want to learn more, they can go to doane.edu. Mm-hmm. But is there another information resource you want to send them to if
they've got questions? That's perfect right now. A lot of people want my cell phone number. I'm not going to give that out right now. But yeah, that's the right way to do it. And then, being in Lincoln, we're only 20 minutes away. Come on down and see the place, because you're going to experience a really special situation that I'm very proud of, and I think our students are very proud to be part of too.
As well should be. President Roger Hughes, president of Doane University, thank you so much for joining us in the AOI podcast studio today.
Jason, this has been great. Thank you so much.
All right. This has been Jason Ball, president and CEO of the Lincoln Chamber of Commerce with Business Link, and we will see you next time.